Hey, Jay, what's going on, man?
Serge, what's up?
Doing well. I'm excited to chat. This is our first virtual podcast. This is the one that's not, we're not in the same exact room for this one. So it's a little interesting, a little different.
This one's different. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I think that we were actually able to do a pretty good job of recreating or simulating the experience of being in front of each other, though.
As best as we possibly can. So for context, Serge normally sits right across from me at a desk. And I'm sitting on the other side, obviously. And so what we've done is we've got Zoom set up. We're piping the audio through there as well as through the Rodecasters. And we're looking at each other just like we were across from each other at the desk. So boom, there we go.
Exactly. And then what we're doing is we're each separately recording in Logic. And then with the Rodecaster multitrack, what we're going to do is we are pretty much going to send each other our Logic files and then take the mic track from one of them and insert it into the other. So then, and then we'll drop out the USB tracks so that the Zoom actual connection is dropped out of the call entirely. And it just sounds like two mics like perfectly spliced together, like we're in the same room.
Well, that's the goal at least.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
So episode 5, this week it's all about technology. We're doing a quick roundup of some of our favorite topics. So we've got 3 major topics that Serge is going to walk us through really quickly. And then we're going to do a rapid fire of some news over the last week. We're super excited for this episode and we hope you guys are too.
Okay, so let's get started, Jay. So I had sent you a couple articles that I had seen on MacRumors that were really interesting. And I think that they would be great topics to discuss in this podcast today. The first was this article that was talking about how Apple filed a patent for Apple Pencil to be able to detect colors in the real world and apply them in the digital, in your piece of artwork or when you're creating a design or just handwriting some notes. So if you really are an artist, right, and you're painting like something in the real world, you'd be able to really quickly just pick colors out from the grass, right? And get that exact color of grass and the different levels of green and so forth.
I mean, if that's real, and a lot of these rumors come up that are very similar to something like this, something wild. And I remember one that came out probably 3 or 4 years ago was Apple was going to be releasing touch, like 3D touch. And I think it was probably the year that we were actually getting 3D touch, like the first time. And people misinterpreted what 3D touch was going to be. And they were like, oh, if you put up grass on the screen and you run your finger across the grass, it's going to feel like grass. And if you put dirt, it's going to feel like dirt. And it's going to somehow manipulate your sensor, your nerves in your fingers to actually feel those things on the screen. And that's not happened yet.
So that technology is a different technology. I mean, a lot of people were talking about it with 3D touch, but actually it's this other technology like you described where it's nanotechnology and it creates nanotextures. So the idea is even less so around necessarily feeling like sand or like flowers or like the actual texture of those things. It would be like, could we create the texture of a keyboard, right? Where you actually create physical keys on a screen.
All right, so back to the Apple Pencil really quickly. Depending on how accurate this technology is, I actually think this might totally change our view on the Apple Pencil and evolve it from being a pencil to being a more universal tool. And what I mean by that is if this actually has like 99% accuracy in color detection of real world and then replicating that in digital, I can see this suddenly being in every contractor's hands, every interior designer's hands, every real person who's just redoing their house's hands, who go, you know, they have house envy of their neighbor and they love that color. They can literally be at the neighbor's house and say, can I just grab this color real quick? Or you could just be sampling out in the real world anything that gives you inspiration and suddenly grab it and bring it in. And I know probably a lot of restorers too, who have to restore old paint in houses, especially colonial houses. It's really hard to replicate that paint and understand exactly what that paint color is And so if you could go in there now with an Apple Pencil, just touch it and suddenly know exactly what that color is and how to replicate it in a paint mixer today. I mean, that's a huge, huge thing. And I think we'd see the Apple Pencil go from being just that writing tool to being a universal tool, like I said before.
The concept of interior design, I think, is actually a really great use case for that feature, where you are just kind of like pulling different like inspirations of color schemes and things like that together for what you're trying to pull together in this room. Or you're trying to quickly, if you're an interior designer, sketch out a little bit of a vision that you have for what that room would like come together. And I think that would be the best, a really, really great use case for that. And what actually really excites me is it's just this continued investment. I know we talked about it in our WWDC one, but this investment in trying to make handwriting just as good, if not better, than type text, right? So I think we're beyond just kind of replicating what paper is. Now we're trying to actually like expand the feature set beyond that, where you're actually better than paper and you're better than type text. And it's this hybrid of the best of both worlds that are coming together that are really exciting. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, actually.
Yeah, I mean, you're literally merging the real world and the digital world at that point. When you can tap something in the real world and immediately be able to replicate some aspect of it perfectly accurately digitally, that is like the merging of those two worlds. And I just had another thought, like how cool would it be to go to a beautiful, let's say, lake that you really love? You're at that lake and you're looking around and you're so inspired by the colors. Let's say it's a fall day in New England and you see all of these different colors of all of these different leaves and you're like, this could be the color palette for my new startup, because it's all about transformation and cyclical stuff, whatever. You could go around and grab a leaf, an orange leaf, and touch it and suddenly drag that, and that's part of your color palette. Go grab a red one. Go grab a green one. Go grab grass. Go grab, I don't know how you would get it, but the sky color, something like that if you could. Maybe there's a camera feature that can do that. But literally recreate the real world in a color palette and say, this is that location. And these are the colors that were there that day as I saw them.
Yeah, I think actually building it into the camera would be more interesting in some ways. So they already have it in some regard. So you can do color pickers off of a photo. That's pretty standard. Mm-hmm. The issue is that obviously colors don't actually always come through in a photograph the way that they actually are in the real world. So it would have to probably be some different technology, and I don't know if they're planning on doing that. There's this other technology that this reminds me of that I think would be even more interesting, which is you're able to scan something and it's able to tell you the molecular composition of that. So you'd be able to scan an object and it could tell you that that's an apple, right? Or which fruit that is. Or if you scan a piece of wood, it could tell you what type of wood that is, or what composition, if it's synthetic wood, what are the molecular compositions that are creating that type of material. And I think that's incredibly powerful. And that would be super, super interesting. This is obviously no rumors. This is just kind of Serge ranting and thinking about these. But that's obviously, the technology is out there and people are working on this. It's obviously very far out, I think, still. But I think that would be remarkable.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's a part of the smartphone of the future. And I don't even know if it'll be called the smartphone anymore, because it really is just like your personal, not even assistant. It's an extension of you, right? I can't get through a day without my phone in reality. I could if I was out in the woods, but trying to live like my normal life without my phone would be a horrible, horribly inconvenient day. Constantly I'm thinking about things and I need that extension of my brain to be able to search and instantly get that knowledge. I need to be able to write down that knowledge, structure that knowledge. I need to be able to take down reminders because my memory's shit because I'm so reliant on this second brain. I could totally see like being able to scan things and know what they are as just a default part, and people totally taking that for granted, being like, what do you mean? Back in the 2020, you couldn't just scan something and know what it was? You had to know what things were for yourself? I think this technology is so cool, and I think like that is the default of the future. And we're just catching the early glimpse of it now. It's going to be really cool to watch that get developed. But I think our kids are going to be using that like it's nothing.
Yeah, when you start combining like LiDAR with like some sort of technology like that, that you could pretty much just like scan a room and it would tell you exactly like what every object is made of, their exact dimensions, full 3D scan of them. I think that's, I mean, that's going to be remarkable. And I think, like you said, that's going to be just table stakes standard feature sets of the smartphones of the future. So to shift gears a little bit, another article I sent you was this Twitter hack. I don't know if you had seen it, but just for context for our listeners, if you guys haven't seen it, a lot of high profile Twitter accounts were hacked in a Bitcoin scam where people they hacked into Apple, they hacked into Joe Biden's campaign, they hacked into all these different accounts, and they posted pretty much saying, here's our Bitcoin address, send us Bitcoin, and if we'll send you back the same amount, doubled. And I think they stole a couple $100,000 before the FBI was able to shut it down and Twitter was able to get to the bottom of it. Twitter released a statement that they believe that someone, they said they some social experiment, put some social experiment on one of their or a couple of their employees and were able to get the employees to actually do it. So I don't know if they were able to trick their employees into doing it or these employees were actually a part of this malicious scheme, but oh my God.
So what I've read is, I mean, this is huge. This is a massive problem and it's something that I don't think Twitter is addressing very well right now. But I think it also just shows us the actual state of vulnerability. The reality is, what I've heard is that Twitter employees were caught in just a standard, simple phishing attack where I don't know if it was like a social experiment game they were sent or whatever, but they were sent something that looked super legit and they ended up exposing credentials that then gave people access to these particular Twitter employees' accounts, which then gave them access to the support functions that they have and the permission set that they have in their account. One of those permission sets was the ability to reset a particular user that's verified's email address. And so what they were doing was they were just going in, doing basic, and this is the problem, basic social engineering, basic phishing, getting these Twitter employees' credentials, going in, changing all of these different celebrities' email addresses to their own, taking over their accounts completely and locking them out. The problem is Twitter has, I'm sure, incredibly robust security infrastructure, incredibly robust security practices. It is simple human stupidity that can unleash this kind of danger all the time. And I think it makes us think, what are the controls that are really in place? What is the data that you give up thinking, okay, these companies are incredibly secure? I give up data all the time to companies knowingly thinking, okay, at least I know it's going to be safe there. But the reality is all the safeguards they could possibly put into place, all it takes is one simple email, one employee, and the whole thing goes down like a house of cards. And so how do you really protect from that?
Yeah, it also just, yeah, I mean, it shows that there's no way that you do protect, right? You can do all of, this is not brute force hacking, right? This is not actually vulnerabilities in the system. This is human error, right? Where you get people that don't even realize it necessarily to more or less give the keys to the kingdom in a lot of these ways. And then the question becomes, does nobody have the ability to change the email address of a verified, like what, you know what I mean? Like it's just once you set it once, that's it. Like that's the only way to truly protect it. So someone's going to be able to have edit rights. And if that person gets their credentials exposed accidentally, there's nothing you can do, right?
That's where this is just a human weakness. And part of the issue is we need to essentially ask humans to act like robots in their vigilance, in communications, in dealing with anything that's inbound that may be suspicious. Part of the issue, I think, is how human beings are incentivized. And so this particular user, it sounds like if it was a social experiment game, as you were saying, probably was a super curious person, probably really liked learning and fell victim to that because that's what they were really incentivized by. I've seen others where they were incentivized by the idea of a simple Amazon coupon, $200 Amazon prize if you fill out this survey. You go in, you give them all this information about your company, and next thing you know, you've just exposed a ton of information that should have never been exposed because you thought it was legit and because you thought you might get $200. In those cases, I would say your employees are probably underpaid because they shouldn't be willing to go into like malicious places or suspicious places to get $200. So that's one way of addressing it. But the other way of addressing it is just you have to be constantly retraining employees to be incredibly vigilant. And you also have to encourage them to come forward when they've made the mistake. Because I've also seen that happen at companies I've worked at where someone clicks on a phishing email, realize afterwards it was clearly a phishing email, go immediately to IT and say, hey, I just clicked on this. There's an issue. I've also seen those that go, shit, I just clicked on this, and try to close out of it as quickly as possible and hope that nothing bad happens. And you cannot allow that to happen. People need to come forward right away and you need to just solve for it. I'd be curious to know if these Twitter employees, once they realized what was going on, were like, hey, that was us. Or if they were waiting to find out what would happen.
Yeah, or if they even didn't know at all until pretty much Twitter was like, hey, you guys realize that you're the accounts that switched this? And they're like, what do you mean?
That would be really sad. That would be really sad if they never put two and two together. All of a sudden they're like, whoa, all these accounts got hacked. And I just did that sketchy social experiment game the other day. So, I mean, Warren Buffett, Elon Musk, who else? Joe Biden. That's a huge one, man. They took over Biden too. Just wild. Really big names that they went after.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so for topic number three of the day, Apple Business Chat. So I don't know if you saw, but on Mac Rumors, there was this article talking about how Zendesk has now released support for all Zendesk customers for Apple Business Chat. And prior to this, it was really a pain in the ass to kind of install and kind of get set up on Apple Business Chat. There was only about like five providers that you had to go through to get support for it. And none of them were really mainstream providers in any way. And now with it being expanded to Zendesk support, I really think that SMS and kind of business chat and Android's doing something similar is really going to be the future of customer support channels, where that's really where people are going to be interacting with companies and getting the support that they need. And I envision actually it going so far as to becoming such a big part of the iMessage app that there would actually be a section in iMessages where it would be maybe like a support section, and you would be able to just type in the name of a company and instantly launch a chat and start beginning to have a conversation with that company. Like the process today is you have to go to the Google page, you have to find the phone number, then you have to, or the contact page, and you have to initiate this chat and you have to initiate the conversation. This would be a really seamless way to just kind of get in contact with those companies that you really need to reach out to for support.
But that would be a massive expansion of the Messages app, right? Adding an entirely new section, panel, a more modular layout. Do you think that Apple would keep it within the Messages app? Or do you think they would do almost what they've done with their own support, which is create a separate app, experience, landing page, whatever you want to call it, for support, but still kind of build it off of the Messages framework?
I could see it going either way. I just think that it's going to happen, right? Where Apple and Google are going to have on iOS and Android these really rich, great experiences for talking to support and getting support for your products that you're purchasing every day.
What I think is really interesting about this too is this might be more of a US phenomenon, and I would love it if we have any international listeners to give us your thoughts on our website. Just submit your thoughts and we'll add it to the next podcast on if this is the case internationally, because I know WhatsApp has done an amazing job integrating a lot of customer service features into that. So I wonder if WhatsApp actually has a lot of this functionality today and maybe for the last few years, and people have been doing this support chat, you know, pretty regularly. And it's now just becoming a thing with us where we tend to use iMessage and stay away from WhatsApp just because of the dominant iOS market share.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely possible. And I'm sure WeChat, you know, in Asia as well. I know that that's a huge platform for support already there as well.
But to your point, this is a massive expansion in opportunity for iMessage to become kind of the central business chat support channel. Because as you mentioned, Zendesk is huge. Zendesk has 150,000 customers. Now, I don't know. Those are all businesses, by the way. Those are not individuals. These are businesses supporting people. So I don't know how many of them are currently subscribing to the Zendesk chat functionality. I would imagine it's a large portion. But the fact that there's now that many businesses who are equipped out of the box to be leveraging Apple Business Chat is pretty amazing. Now, personally, I haven't seen it used anywhere else. I haven't used it in any support experiences of my own. I've typically used whatever the business has, and then that's one of the classic kind of five providers. But I would love to see it more often. Have you actually experienced Apple Business Chat, Serge?
Yeah, I've actually used it for interacting with JetBlue, getting some flight changes actually right around the start of COVID to kind of just get my flight canceled and refunded back to me.
Yeah.
Of course, in flight credits, unfortunately. But right at the middle of March, I was supposed to be going to Las Vegas on a work trip and had to end up canceling it right as COVID hit and everything started to go down into lockdown.
So can you actually describe this experience in case any of our listeners don't know what Apple Business Chat is and how it works?
Think of it very much as just a text message chat with your friend in iMessage. And just instead of having kind of a person as the in that top bar, the entire top bar becomes a specific color, a brand specific color. You get a logo for that company. So it's very clear that you're speaking to this company. And then it's just much like just having a SMS conversation or iMessage conversation with them in the Messages app.
Is there any additional functionality or is it essentially just a Messages conversation but with the business?
So you can build an app on top of it, right? So if you want, you could build in additional support flows that kind of pop up, do-it-yourself flows and things like that. I haven't experienced that one yet. I've just experienced it as a great way to kind of like chat with the with an agent. I think with App Clips coming out too, it'll be a great place for them to actually come together and create a lot of power where you're going to be able to, you know, have companies send in these support channels an App Clip. It opens up to this like full page app that's very context specific to exactly what's happening in that conversation and will really give them a great experience, like where it seems like a full native rich experience through chat, giving them the information to buy the product, giving them direct link, taking them right into their cart, and all these other things you can do through deep linking and App Clips, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you layer in natural language processing too, and I think this becomes really powerful. Imagine, I'm just thinking about like my favorite deli. During COVID, you have to call them up. They're typically super busy, so it takes them like 5 minutes to answer the phone. You make a place an order and go. They also have like your classic online order system, like with a menu and whatnot. It's still like one of those clunky third-party interfaces. I think it would be so cool if I could just text them or iMessage them and be like, what's today's specials? And just automatically, you know, they have NLP enabled through Apple on their side, are able to immediately process that, understand, okay, we're looking for today's specials, and then serve that back to me really quickly in like a rich little snippet. And now I know exactly what today's specials are. And then I can just in natural language respond back and say, okay, I want three of this. And it'll come back to me with, okay, your subtitle is this. Do you want to order? Yes, go. And instead of having to go through an actual like structured ordering experience, you're ordering in total natural language.
So you pretty much want chatbots in iMessage is what you're asking for.
Yes, but smarter chatbots. Because right now a chatbot is just a, what's the best way to say it? A crossing guard or a street director, you know, the police officer that stands there and directs traffic. They're just saying, okay, go left, go right, and then we're going to serve you your next two messages. And you either go left or you go right. And it just keeps bringing you down decision tree pathways where NLP is more like a matrix and there's all of these different possibilities and connections. And so you're having a natural conversation. You're not just speaking to a chatbot.
So just to be clear, is this something that you want Apple to be providing in business chat back to all of whatever providers use business chat? Or is this something that you're just hoping like Zendesk builds and that just you start seeing more companies adopt separate from
I think as a channel, iMessage should be able to do that with business chat because Apple's already designed and built the NLP engine. That's what a lot of Siri's built on. Like they have all of these APIs that they could open up further within messages to enable that. So the technology is already there. This is really just a feature at this point.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that would work. Because I think the way that it works really right now is it's just a channel, right? So for Zendesk, it's just an additional channel, just like SMS or chat or email or phone. And it's not like you're necessarily going to be getting Apple's processing. And there's also Android, right? Which is going to be have something very similar too. So I'd be interested to kind of see if you have to start developing a full app and they start having a developer SDK for business chat rather than it just being some other channel that gets supported by these providers, CRM providers.
That's an interesting point. I didn't realize it was literally just the pipe. So it's less than a channel. It's just a pipe because they're not getting any, well, I guess that is the definition of a channel, but you're not getting anything else through that. It's literally just message through iMessage.
Yeah, and I think that you can build some like more rich experiences, right, that you can deep link to, right? So if you want to, you can develop a support app pages that kind of open up and similar to app clips would kind of just quickly take you to that context to make a change payment for that order or whatever.
It would be way cooler if they essentially had an SDK for business chat that opened up and exposed all of these other Apple APIs that then allow you to kind of take advantage of the iOS OS beyond just this channel experience. Because that's where I think you could layer in NLP. And then Zendesk is leveraging business chat as a channel that already has all of that processing power built in. It's not up to you now to build a proprietary NLP engine.
I've always kind of thought about if they were to release like a business kit SDK that would be similar to that. And I think a big part of it would be opening up NFC support in iPads. So they have the NFC chips. They're just not used for anything in iPads today, except for iBeacons in theory, because it doesn't support Apple Pay, which is one of the main things that NFC is used for on the iPhone. And yeah. I think it would be very interesting if they really opened up support for that on iPads to more or less make every iPad a POS system and take on Square with Apple Pay, where if you want to just start taking credit cards and have this be like part of the Apple Card initiative in theory, where if you wanted to start taking credit cards with just Apple Pay and NFC, just phone and, you know, phone and Apple Watch tapping or Android to pay, every iPad would come with that support natively. So all you need to do as a business is just go pick up a new iPad or do the software update on your existing iPad and you could start taking credit cards and start making money.
Where would you tap? Well, no, you couldn't start taking credit cards unless they were the tap ones, right?
Correct. So through NFC, right? So if the credit card has the three lines for tapping or Google Pay, Android Pay or Apple Pay. You'd be able to take those.
Yeah. So, but where would you even tap it? Like in the center of the back of the iPad?
Correct. Pretty much. I believe so.
That experience would suck. Especially because think about it. Most POS systems actually have an iPad built into them anyways. Unless you're with Square, who builds their own POS. So you've already got an iPad but it's in those podium things, they're built into the counter. And so the back of it's not exposed. And I think that's probably the biggest issue.
Yeah, but I'm sure what's that amazing, if Apple were to do this, they would come out with some stand that they would sell with it that would have an additional way to pay for it. But in theory, you could just use your iPad, right? And it comes out of the box, like turnkey solution.
Yeah. You think that has to do with the fact that Apple is very careful about not becoming a business solution company? In the sense that they want businesses to use their solutions. They know it's professional grade, but they don't want to become IBM in that there's like a separate buying experience for businesses or that they're developing business specific software. Because everything they do can both be used for business and it can be used for consumers.
It's not business specific, right? And there, I mean, you can come up with a consumer way to do it, right? I mean, Square originally launched as really for consumers in a way to like get to charge friends, or like if you're doing a deal on Craigslist, how do you like you do a credit card instead of cash for that? And it was really,
I looked at that as a startup solution. I don't know. I hesitate to say that original Square reader that plugged into the aux jack was a consumer solution.
Like, watch the original video. It's about a guy moving out and selling his furniture and charging everyone for all the furniture he sells.
That's interesting. I didn't realize they actually positioned it that way. But we used them to sell t-shirts, to your point. Like as a fraternity, when we were in college, as clubs that we were a part of, fundraisers, et cetera. So interesting. But it's also interesting because if Apple wanted to, they could absolutely crush this market.
Yeah.
Look at the internal tools they build. And they already have essentially POS systems, which are cases attached to iPhones that work wonderfully. They could roll that out as a business solution. But again, I don't think they actually want to be in the business of making B2B business solutions.
Well, I think where the shift would happen is that they wouldn't necessarily need to make that much hardware, right? So you don't need to have a case for every iPhone. Every iPhone can just start accepting payments. And I think it would be like a...
But why wouldn't they do that?
You could build it originally as an internal initiative, right? So that just for all of the salespeople at an Apple store, they all have the ability to just take payments on the fly without having any cases and just have bare iPhones or whatever and take those payments, and then eventually roll that out to anybody to use, right? Whether it's just yourself that wants to take payments from a friend instead of Venmo, just through a tap of the phone to each other, to businesses actually starting to conduct transactions.
But if that was a highly viable solution, why wouldn't Apple have done it before by now?
Apple says no to Apple doesn't do a lot of things.
But they spent all this money developing this proprietary Apple-only POS system for Apple devices that work as a case instead of just turning on a little piece of software. So you think
like
they would have done it?
On their own device, like on the iPhones in their stores, you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, the difference is that they need to be able to take credit cards physically.
Yeah. So, they do
so
need
the
that
shift would have to be, we're no longer going to be able, you're no longer going to be able to pay with a physical credit card anywhere in the store. It's like, we're going to have to take you to this specific location where there's a credit card swiper. Otherwise, you have to pay through a wireless NFC transaction, whether that's tap to pay from your physical credit card or from your phone, whether that be Apple Pay, Google Pay.
Honestly, I don't think this is ever going to be an issue in 12 months because COVID has totally accelerated the way that credit card providers are rolling out touchless credit cards.
Exactly.
Scared out of their minds that once we do reopen, that people are going to be too afraid to actually go into retail stores and spend safely. So they're developing at rapid paces or rolling out at rapid paces their touch-free cards. And that's across all lines. It used to be, you know, top-tier cards would get that. Now it's everyone's getting it. And so I think in 12 months, you're hardly going to see anyone inserting a card or swiping anymore.
Yeah. I can already tell you with my family too. I mean, everything that we do for takeout, we're giving the credit card over the phone as well. Mm-hmm. If it's a place doesn't support Apple Pay.
Yeah.
So that we don't need to actually have any credit card physically being touched.
So we just went on this little payments tangent, and I just want to end quickly as we wrap this up with an anecdote from last night. So are you familiar with Toast?
Yeah, it's a Square competitor, right?
Exactly. So we went out last night. We sat inside of this restaurant. They did an incredible job making sure everyone was socially distanced, making sure if there were larger parties, they were at completely opposite sides of the restaurant. It was my first time dining indoors since March 13th. And I actually felt very comfortable about it. At the end of the meal, we got our receipt and there was a little QR code on it. And it was the ability to you know, pay touchless online. And I was like, oh, perfect. And my brother instinctually was like, oh, it's Apple Pay. So I was like, oh, perfect. I'm going to scan this QR code real quick and we'll pay with Apple Pay. Instead, it was Toast. So it brought us to the Toast landing page. It wanted me to put in my first name, my last name, my address, my credit card number, my expiration date, all of this. And I was like, honestly, at this point, instead of putting all of this information in just to get myself set up with Toast, I'm just going to give them the credit card and let them do it and take the risk. Honestly, I don't care anymore. So do you envision that Apple's ever going to be rolling out Apple Pay in a way that we could be printing out QR codes on receipts and just immediately scanning and paying? Or do you think that's something that's going to be a few years down the road?
Yeah, I think that would actually be a really cool way to do it. So they have QR code scanning now built into the camera app. And you'd be able to just tap on the camera app, open it up, scan the QR code. And then when you tap on the link that shows up, it would actually just pop up with that Apple Pay card with the amount that you need to pay and then a double tap to complete the payment. And it would be incredibly seamless and a great experience for a way to pay, I think, actually.
It seems like a no-brainer to me. Every restaurant could start printing out QR codes tomorrow. And Apple Pay, you already have your credit card set up. So literally by the time you get your receipt, you could be checked out and on your way in 10 seconds.
That's something Apple could spin up in less than a week.
I'm sure they've got a few rockstar developers that'll have that.
No, but I mean, to really think about it, to get marketing all involved, like to actually like roll that out, like you gotta, they could literally do it all in a week.
I don't know why they're not, because Toast is doing it. And I have to tell you, it was a pretty decent experience if I was a Toast customer already, but I'm not getting set up with Toast just to check out once.
Yeah. Actually, Toast should be employing Apple Pay at that point just to do it themselves as an Apple Pay developer. Or as an Apple developer, they should be able to use the QR code, have it open up the Toast app, and then just with the Apple Pay ready, all set, where they pass the information to it to complete the payment.
Well, that's what I was honestly most shocked about, is that Toast didn't support Apple Pay as a payment option. It's like, why do I need to put in a credit card?
Yeah.
Just let me check out with Apple Pay. And Toast could have still been the provider in the middle. I don't know. Something's not going right over there. But Toast, you lost a customer last night. Sucks to suck, buddy. Even in this COVID world, I used a credit card.
That says a lot. Okay, so Jay, I think let's jump into the week in review and go through a couple of rapid fire topics real quick.
All right.
Before we wrap out the episode.
All right, let's go. Weekly rapid fire roundup. GPT-3 was released in July. So this is not this week, but it was this month. Everyone's been freaking out for the last few weeks. For those who don't know, GPT-3 is an algorithm created by OpenAI. It is the largest current algorithm ever built for machine learning at 175 billion parameters. This thing essentially is built to guess the next word. And so in a practical use case, what does that mean? It means it can take massive sets of data with very little training, consume all of that data, and then essentially summarize it in plain human language. There are so many applications for this. Developers are thinking about all of the things that they can do. It is open source, so anyone can take advantage of it. That said, I'm sure security folks around the world are also very scared about the possible malicious applications of GPT-3. Regardless, super exciting, and it's out there. Number two, AirPods and hearing accommodations for music and movies. Apple is known for its ability to kind of open up the world and create a ton of accessibility so anyone can use its technology. It's doing a great job now with AirPods by allowing you to have hearing accommodations in both music and movies, enhancing things like details and music as well as voices. I honestly have pretty good hearing, but I still sometimes can't hear vocals that well. So I'm super excited. I'll probably take advantage of that. And we see that normally happen with Apple's accessibility features. Those without real difficulties end up using them. Big Sur Beta 3, macOS 11 is out. Developers got their hands on it. And finally, thank you. Apple killed the ugliest icon they've ever built in the battery icon and system preferences. Bye-bye, old icon. Hello, new icon. It's gorgeous. Let's go. Apple TV Plus expansion. Following the success of Tom Hanks' Greyhounds, the movie about Tom Hanks, World War II, leading a ship. Honestly, I haven't watched it yet, so I don't know much more details than that, but I know it's been wildly successful. And following that, Apple is trying to buy as many blockbuster movies as possible to get released on the platform. So they have massive expansion goals, and they said they're trying to get to Netflix-like levels of content. So that's super exciting, and I'm hoping to see that actually start rolling out in the next 24 months or so. In code, we found in the latest Big Sur code, it seems that there might be support for Face ID in Mac Surge. I know this is something that you're pretty passionate about. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I think this is super exciting. So something that I've always been like a pet peeve of mine is that they haven't released an updated wireless keyboard with a Touch ID in it. So the reason that I cannot clamshell my MacBook Pro is because I need the access to the Touch ID, and you can't get that through a wireless keyboard. And this seems like the reason they've never done it is because they've just had this plan to go with Face ID in the future and just skip it altogether. And I'm very interested to see if this is how they do a Pro XDR display version 2 to get everyone to upgrade their $7,000 displays, saying, hey, guess what? Now there's a camera and a Face ID unlock built right into the display. That would be very interesting to me.
That would be so low. That would be so low, and that would be so Apple. I would not be surprised if they did that at all. Also, hello, Windows has had Windows Hello for like 5 years now. People have been unlocking their computers with their faces. Let's go, Apple. And finally, on that, hello, Apple, you have the worst webcam in the industry. What the fuck's going on here? It's time to update that, and it's time to get some other technology in there.
With everyone working from home, some major investment in the FaceTime HD cameras on the Macs would be huge.
Huge, huge. So that's super exciting, and hopefully later this fall when we see new Macs rolled out, we'll see that incorporated. And finally, on Mac rumors this week, there was the Apple Glasses mock-up. Now, we don't know if this is going to be happening in the near future, but it's amazing to see this mock-up and how these particular render artists have imagined this thing out. Serge, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we'll throw the link in the description and the show notes, but it was just a really interesting mock-up. I mean, we've been talking for years about the introduction of Apple Glasses. Everyone always talks about how, you know, people are just lost in their phones, right? Face down in their phones. And I'm like, you guys haven't seen anything yet. Just wait until Apple Glasses come out, and then the entire world that everybody sees through is going to have this layer, digital layer over it. And it's going to actually come up and be in front of your eyes all the time. And this mock-up was just this little quick 12-second video, I think. And it was just a really cool representation of some of the possibilities of what Apple Glasses could potentially look like with virtual keyboards and ability to kind of control settings with your fingers in the air and so forth.
Yeah. I'm hoping we see this actually start to hit development sooner rather than later, because we've seen some pretty good examples of augmented reality with glasses in the future. Google Glasses, obviously one of the most notable. Even Oakley had some augmented reality in its snowboarding goggles and skiing goggles. So the technology's been out there. The implementations haven't been fantastic yet, enough so that this could really hit the mainstream. But we know that Apple is brilliant about taking bold new ideas and concepts and bringing it to the world in a way that everyone feels is consumable. So it's super exciting to see renders like this pop up, and hopefully it's reflective of the reality of Apple actually working on this internally.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. So amazing week in tech, lots of stuff happening. I think this was a great episode, kind of wrapping it all up, episode 5, and super excited to be back next week.
Thank you. And if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button.